Has anybody felt like it's been a rough week? Yes, I think we have all felt that way. Angie and I are on our, we were at her reunion this week, and we heard the news, obviously, of what was going on in Afghanistan. And then we drove home Monday, listening to the radio all day, to see what's happening and what's going to happen, what we thought. And then we got home and found out that our brother Jason died the next morning. Well, we got home actually that night, and then the next morning our brother Jason died. And what that has done, I believe that we could all say, it has all made us much more aware of the brevity of life, how quickly things can change, and how, I guess you could say, we sort of brought, or Jason sort of brought COVID home to us in one way that we never imagined. And just so happens that, of course, then my son Jason also had COVID, and obviously while we were leaving, in fact, we decided we were going to go ahead and go to the reunion after after Jason tested positive, and we had basically gone for 5 days without any symptoms, so we felt like we were safe to go. But even almost to Tennessee, in fact, we were actually in Tennessee and started thinking about maybe we should turn around and go back. So we really weren't too sure about all of this that's going on. I say that to say this, and that is that I was supposed to speak today about Romans chapter 5, starting in verse 12, and had that ready to go, but I decided this morning to change and talk about something else. Now, for those of you who've been around for a long time, you know that I generally don't talk much about prophecy. You know why? I don't like it. I don't like what I see sometimes, but there again, there's times I like everything I see, you know, in prophecy. But that's just a cop-out, because really the big deal about prophecy is I'm not very educated in it. I haven't studied into it very often, and I don't want to start delving into something that I don't know hardly anything about. But what's happening right now is something that we can actually look back upon, I think. And so I want to talk a little bit about prophecy today and some of the things that we are witnessing right now and how that may play out in our lives, maybe in the very short future. It was interesting last week when we went to Nashville. Most of Angie's friends that were still in this walk, we're all going to go one place. And my brother, who was actually in town in Nashville, who there for a reunion himself, they were all going to meet at the Church of God group there in Nashville, Tennessee. Angie and I decided not to. We decided to go to a place called Mercy Collective, which is a Hebrew roots group that was in part started by a friend of ours whose name is John Diffendurfer. Now, John Diffendurfer, for those of you who know the Diffendurfers, John's father was big into the Hebrew Roots movement years ago. And so we saw this church that we knew about this church that John was a part of and actually was the pastor of. And so we decided we'd go over there, and we were able to join in a Torah study over there, which is really nice. We really enjoyed that. And then John got up to give the message, and his message was, "Who is Israel?" And so we were pleased. We didn't know if John had gone off to the side, and so we listened to the message, and really good delivery and all of that. And so I went up to him afterwards, and I told him, and I congratulated him. I said, "John, I'm just so glad to know that you're still with this way of thinking. You haven't deviated off from this Torah walk in the understanding and the importance of letting the people know who Israel is, because his congregation is much like ours. We're all pretty new to this thing, okay? We're all learning, okay? This is not something that most of us were raised in. And so I'm just glad that this is what he deemed to be important, especially at that time that he gave it. So I want to talk about Israel, but I don't really want to talk about Israel and the concept of who is Israel, but I do want to do that here in the near future. And so I'll just give you fair warning. After the feast, this is what we're going to focus on for a while. And we're going to make sure everybody understands who we are, so that we know where we fit into this whole prophetic thing. But I'm going to assume, because I know most of you do understand who Israel is, I'm just going to assume that most of you can catch on or ask questions of those who doesn't. Because, you know, even though many of us out here in the world, many in the church don't know who Israel is, guess who does know who Israel is? Ha-Satan, the adversary. He knows who Israel is, and so it is his role, you might say, or his desire to destroy Israel, because like it or not, the scripture indicates that God's people will be saved through who? Israel. Israel is going to be the vehicle by which God's people will be saved. Now, I know it's a tough one, but it's the way it is. Now, obviously the Messiah is what? The King of Christianity? The King of Israel. And so it is through His people that God is going to save the world. Ha-Satan knows that, and so his best chance of diverting or destroying God's plan is to do what? Destroy Israel. So, most of the world today looks at Israel as being a little piece of real estate on the eastern edge of the Mediterranean Sea, which would be best called Judea, because it's mostly Jewish people who live over there. Because the majority of the people of Israel don't live in that part of the world. There's 6 million Jews, roughly, in Judea today, in the land that we call Israel today. Unfortunately, many of those Jewish people call the part that we technically own, they call it the West Bank. But it's actually called Samaria in the Bible. And so, while the world is focused on Israel being over there, Ha-Satan is being focused on where the majority of Israel is, and that's right here, in the United States of America. Now, we may not understand that we're Israelites. We may not. This is not a Aryan nations type thing or anything like that. It's just in identifying the fact that the people of the book, there's two groups. We're talking about Amalek today. If we could grab somebody from Amalek and say, who are your biggest enemies? They would say they are the people of the book. That's this book. Right here. The people of the book. And who are the people of the book? The Jews and the Christians. Okay? Because Amalek knows who Israel is as well. And that's why it's their purpose to destroy not only them, those in the land that we currently call Israel today, but also those who live in this country, because we are also Israel. We're part of the 12 tribes, of which Judah is only one of those tribes. So he's done a pretty good job of keeping everybody's eyes focused on that little sliver of land over there while he systematically destroys this nation right here. But thankfully for us, God has put a hedge around us. Leviticus 16, and I do have some slides here, by the way. Only I got the wrong one pulled up here first. I think I do. Uh-oh, how do I get this going now? I forget what I got to do. I got to press something. Just say anything?
Just press something.
Just press something? Oh, I got to get it over here. I got to get my cursor over here. That's where it is. Oh, man. All right, we're not participating here right now, so I guess I'll do it this way. How's that? Well, that's not the slide I wanted, okay? I got it out of order there for a second. Okay, we're going to start right here in Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26, if you go through the Torah study, you know this is called the blessings and curses portion of Leviticus. In Leviticus chapter 26, verse 1, it starts with saying, actually, I got to get this bigger so I can read it. Well, I'm going to have to do this. This is what I got to do. All right, I can read it now. Leviticus chapter 26, verse 1 is where we're supposed to be. So let's get over there. No, that's not it. Actually, I guess I copied a slide on the wrong thing. So, I tell you what, I'll just read it out of here. How's that? You guys read it too, okay? Actually, I think I'm actually starting at verse 14. Let's just do that. You know, I'll start back a little bit. No, I know what I'm doing now. Hey, I did this morning, folks. I'm just going to summarize Leviticus chapter 26. This is where God gives the blessings, okay? This is where He says all the things He will do for Israel if Israel would walk in His way. Now, though there's a lot of different views about this, I believe that this nation was founded as a God-fearing nation. And why do I feel that way? Because all of our founders were pretty much God-fearing people. They may have had problems, they may have had vices, but nevertheless, they were God-fearing people in this country. And it says here in, I think it's verse 13, I guess I am going to have to turn there, Leviticus 26:13. It says, verse 9 says, "For I will look upon you favorably and make you fruitful, multiply you, and confirm my covenant with you." That word there for confirm is the word kun, and kun means to establish my covenant. And so what God is saying about Israel is that He would eventually establish, what that means by establish, it means bring to pass. Bring to pass the blessings that I have pronounced upon you. Because all of this before here is blessings. Now God did that once before, and that is in the reign of King David and King Solomon. Well, he brought all the blessings of it that he had promised, pretty much on David and on his son Solomon. And during David's time, David basically controlled all the lands that God had promised to Israel. And of course, during Solomon's day, Israel became the richest nation on the face of the earth. In fact, it's estimated by a number of people that King Solomon alone was worth more than the entire value of everything in the United States of America today. That's how rich this guy was. So the blessings that were given were just tremendous, tremendous blessings. So God established His covenant with them, and I'm telling you, and I believe very firmly, that God established His covenant with this nation too. Now, how do I know that? Because we are today, what? The greatest, wealthiest nation on the face of the earth. And it started back right around the 1800s when our fathers decided they were going to break free from the bonds of King George and the Church of England. And they were going to worship God the way they believe that they should worship God. And for those who have searched this out, we know that many people in that day were Sabbath-keeping people when they came into the United States of America. And so our nation was founded on this. God put a hedge around us so that we could take and be these people. We could walk His ways and we would receive the blessings of it. Now, that doesn't mean we are perfect. Neither was King David, was he? King David did some pretty rotten things. But nevertheless, God's covenant with David was there, and He blessed David because of David's heart for God, his heart for his people, and heart for God's way of life. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about death. You know, we're dealing with this COVID thing and talking about that, and this one guy was talking about his, you know, scared, doesn't want to die young. And I said, well, you know, I've sort of resolved that in my life. I said, I've said for a long time, the man who was the only person ever called a man after God's own heart died at 70. And so if we make it to 70, we're all pretty good. And so Andre's on bonus time right now. And so is Sally.
So is Sally.
So
Sally's more on bonus time than me.
Yeah, so anyway. So I hope to get on bonus time myself, but 70's, I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to complain about it. Hey, Angie's fixed that. I tell you what. My reputation is just blown to pieces.
Oh, no.
Yeah, if you just see what we eat now, it's terrible. I mean, it's good stuff, but... All right. But something happened to this country in 1962, because there was a court case in 1962. It's called Engle versus Vital. And this is the court case where prayer in public school was prohibited. It's also interesting to note that in 1962, John Kennedy was assassinated. 1962, Lyndon Johnson became president. And in 1962, the Vietnam War, or 1963, the Vietnam War was escalated. So a lot of things began to happen right after we as a country rejected God in our schools. And I would submit to you, at that time, God began to lower the hedge around our country. And He's been lowering it ever since. Our nation, within a very short period of time, turned to decadence, basically, allowing all kinds of homosexuality, disrespect. You know, as during that time, if you look at a Pew Research graph, you'll see that in 1962, church attendance started to plummet. And so our nation has basically turned against God pretty heftily since 1962. And in from that point forward, our national debt has increased just tremendously. Oftentimes because of endless wars, but also because of endless giveaways. And things have been going downhill from that point. So, what I would submit to you is that where we are today, like I mentioned earlier today, where we are today is grossly different than it was in 1962. Grossly different. And those of us who lived through that time, we didn't really have to worry about some of the things that we're worrying about today. 1962, we did have prayer in school. 1962, we had Christmas parties. We had Easter parties. I tell you, I wish we would have Christmas parties in school today, because at least the people are worshiping, at least in their mind, they're worshiping God. But now they've rejected that. And so we have now holidays or winter holidays and stuff like that in school. So we've gotten very far away from what we had before. I would dare say to you that what we're beginning to witness is what's called in Scripture the Day of the Lord. Or some call it the birth pains of the Messiah. God calls it by a number of different terms. The Day of the Lord, birth pains of Messiah. One of the phrases that's most often being in the scripture you'll find is the phrase, in that day. In fact, I did a study this past week on the term in that day, and it is there's a ton of references to in that day. So, what is the birth pains of Messiah? Well, it's not necessarily a good period of time. It's a period of time, though, that God will use to bring Israel back. And though oftentimes people who speak a prophecy sort of delight in the concept of in that day, oftentimes because Christians, I say Christians, I use that as a generic term, and there's different views all over the place, but a lot of people believe that they're going to be saved from that day, they're going to be raptured, go to heaven, but the Jews are the ones that are going to have to suffer in that day. And why do they believe that? Because the scripture indicates that the tribulation, the birth pains of the Messiah apply to Israel. Okay? But who is Israel? Okay. So, it's a time that is going to be not the best of times, but it's also not a time that we should be really scared of or anything like that. But we should take note of and we should be careful about. But it's certainly not a time that, I know in Hebrew roots, there's this idea that we'll bring on the tribulation. I want to be right with my Jewish brothers during the tribulation. Well, I would say that if you're of that mindset, I would turn you to this scripture right here. Woe to you. Oh, it's not up there, is it? Woe to you who desire the day of the Lord. Why would you have the day of the Lord? It is darkness and not light. So it's not something that we should relish in, even if we do think that we might be a part of it, or maybe we think that way because we think that only the Jews are going to be a part of it, but it's not something that we should relish in for anybody, because it's not a good time. But it does have a purpose, and its purpose is to teach God's people, or draw people back to who God is, and its purpose is to restore Israel back as His people. So, I want to talk then a little bit about Leviticus 26, continuing on in Leviticus 26, verse 14. It says, but if you will not, and I bring this up because this is the beginning of the birth pain. This is the beginning of the curses that are going to go upon Israel. And I want to show you, and I guess if you could say if I have a specific purpose in my talk, I want you to see that we can identify where we are in these things. And we have to go a little bit deeper, though, than just the surfacey reading the King James. We've got to go into the words. And so you'll see here on the slide there that I've put much of this on here, and I've also put in the Hebrew words there so we can get a little bit understanding of what's going on. So let's read. We're going to read through here Leviticus 26, starting at verse 14. It says, but if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes. The word for the despise is the word reject or refuse. It's not a statement that you don't know my statutes. It's just that you do know my statutes, but you refuse to keep them. And I dare say that we could probably identify with some peoples who do know these things, but for whatever reason, they've decided they're not for them. Okay? And I think this is the case that we've been mentioning here today with Jacob. Jacob was bringing people out who know the Bible. But they're everything they can do to take and try to keep and admit that I should be doing these things. They come up with a fight against all this. So the word is there is ma'as, and it means to refuse, reject. If you reject them, if your soul abhor them, again it's a word ga'al. You know them, but reject them. It's, again, this basically the same type of word. My judgments, so that you will not do all my commandments, but you break, or parah, to violate the covenant. And this is an interesting point right here, is that breaking the covenant doesn't do away with the covenant. The covenant's still there. You may break your marriage covenant, Does that do away with the covenant? No. You may go out and commit adultery. You may do any number of things. I mean, it could be, like we talked about today, submit, you know. If a man refuses to love his wife, what has he done? He's broken the covenant. It doesn't nullify the covenant. The covenant's still there. And so God takes, and in the covenant, He has given us what? Blessings, but He's also given us what? Curses. So being under the covenant, if you're walking in His way, you get the blessings. If you walk contrary to His way, you're still under the covenant, but you now get to enjoy the curses. Okay? So, and the word there, perar, just simply means to violate or frustrate. You frustrate the covenant because you've thrown something in there that's not supposed to be in there. Okay? In verse 16, I will also do this to you. Actually, I was meaning to take and highlight all these, and I didn't get to it. So the rest of them, they're bold, but they're not yellow color like that. Verse 16, I also will do this to you. I will even appoint upon over you terror, which means not necessarily terror. It means alarm. Like, really? They would do that? Really? They would mandate that you have to take a vaccine? I mean, they can't do that. Right? Is anybody doing things nowadays that we never thought anyone would do? Okay. That's terror. Okay. I will also appoint over you terror. Consumption, which is an interesting word. The word consumption, Strong's number 7829, means a wasting disease of the lung. Of the lungs. Does anybody recognize that? What do we call it today? COVID. Most people who survive COVID never had damage done to their lungs, or if so, minimal damage. Remember, President Trump was going to produce 6 trillion what? Respirators. Because there are so many people who were affected by their lungs. I will appoint a wasting disease of the lungs and a burning plague, a fever, which it generally accompanies what? COVID. That shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow to the heart, basically means a slow dying. A slow dying. The words there are pine away is doob, which means pine away, you're starting to die, and naphish, which is the living body. A living body or their flesh. And you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it, and I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies, that they that hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee where none pursues you. And this continues in verse 18, and if you will not yet for all this, in other words, God's saying, if this is not enough, if what we're facing today is not enough, then He says, this is what I will do. If you will not yet for all this hearken unto me, then I will punish you 7 times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power. Now the word there for pride is majesty, and power, the word for power is oz or oz, and it means strength. Now, notice what God says here. He didn't say that I will take away your power. He says, I will break the pride of your power. You will still have the power, but you won't be willing to use it. He's not taking away our power. He's got these people that He's talking about will be a people who are very strong, but they're not willing to use their strength to fulfill the purpose that they should be using it for. Any ideas what that might be indicative of today? Huh? No. United States military. You may not realize it, but today, I would assume it happened today because it happened yesterday and the day before, that the French were running patrols all through Afghanistan collecting French people. The British are running patrols all through Afghanistan collecting British people. The United States is surrounded by a fence around an airport. We're not going outside of that fence, except I think we did one time to collect 169 people who had made their way up to the fence. We're not going out to collect people. Why? We're afraid. Are we strong enough to go out there and do that? Yes. But are we willing to do that? No. Does this bring these prophecies home a little bit now? I think so. At least they do to me, and that's why I'm talking about prophecy, which is something that I very seldom talk about. Because we can see it. I can see it happening right before our eyes. Is it something to be concerned about? Yeah. Is it something to be scared about? No. I tell people, I told my friend in Nashville last week, I said, I'd be scared to death if I wasn't a believer. But I'm a believer, and so I'm not scared to death. Because I know how it all works out. All right. Okay, so we see these things. We see these things happening right before our eyes. Let's see where I'm at here. Right before our eyes. You know, what's different, you know, we've had catastrophes in this country before. 20 years ago, just under 20 years ago, we had the Twin Towers fall down, right? 20 years ago, there was a big, big spike in church attendance. Now, when the COVID thing hit, more people, even though I greatly discount the numbers put out by the CDC and the federal government, nevertheless, a lot of people died of COVID. Probably well over 3,000 that died in Twin Towers thing. Have you heard any news about our churches being filled up? No. No. See, 20 years ago, our nation, even for a brief moment in time, repented. For a brief moment in time, they may have considered the fact that maybe we as a nation are not really walking the way we should. But now, what are we doing today? We're depending on another God to keep us alive, right? And that God is government. Well, that's exactly where HaSatan wants us to be. Depending on government. Because who rules the government right now? We often wonder who's pulling President Biden's strings. I think it's pretty obvious who's pulling his strings. So, anyway. So let's go on into Leviticus. I went ahead and jumped ahead of there in Leviticus. So we still have strength and power, but we're not willing to move forward on that. This is a pretty good timeline because in Leviticus 26, God says, I'm going to do this. And if you don't repent, I'm going to do this. And then he says again, if you don't repent, I'm going to do this. Okay, I think we've seen that he has already done at least two of these things. So all we have to do to see what's going to happen next is keep reading on, right? Now, we would have never dreamed, I would have never dreamed that, I mean, I've heard this passage taught for 50 years. Where he says, starting here in verse 16 of Leviticus, I will do this to you. I will point terror over you. I mean, I've always heard this. It's just, you're going to be terrified. In fact, we had pictures of people so grossly disfigured because of the terror that they were seeing happening before their eyes. Well, see, the word terror means that you're going to have a disease that affects your lungs. That's what the Hebrew word actually means. And so now we can see these things happening with 20/20 vision, right? But with this 20/20 vision that we now have, we should take and begin to try to look ahead a little bit and see what these other things are and instill these things in our mind so that when these things happen, we know what's happening. Now, what does Leviticus chapter 26, 14 through 17 mean to me? It means to me we're in the last days. It means to me that God is true to His Word. Because if He's true to His Word here, He's also true to His Word when you get down to Deuteronomy 30. He says, "And when my people are in distress, they will call on me and I will draw them back." Because those words are just as true as these words. And so, this thing can be a double-edged sword for us. All right? We can take and see the harm that's going to cause, but also realize the blessings that are going to come from these. And I would submit to you, especially those of you who have children, that you focus on the blessings of these things so that they can see that there is light on the other side of this tunnel. Light at the end of the tunnel. Let's go on in we already done that one. I want to turn on down then to Isaiah 3 verses 1 through 12. Isaiah also talks about the end times. And he often speaks in regards to Judah because Isaiah is a prophet who basically spoke of Judah, even though he was also speaking to the northern tribes of Israel as well. The northern tribes had not been taken into captivity at this time that Isaiah is speaking. And he says, chapter 3, verse 1, "For behold, Yahweh, the Lord of hosts, takes away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stock and the store, the whole supply of bread," which means, oh no, he actually says it, the whole supply of bread and the whole supply of water. In other words, he's bringing on a famine. Now, trouble with God, the thing about God is that he doesn't have to bring upon a famine. All he has to do is just let us cause our own famines. And we've done a pretty good job of that because right now the Western United States is burning up. That includes the areas, the mountainous areas that when snows collect on them, that water from those snows is slowly melted off and fills up the reservoirs of the California Basin. And the California Basin is where we get about, 75% of our produce in this country? But because of these fires, that's going to cause a problem with that. But it's not just the fires. There's the mismanagement of the water in California. You may not be aware that in California still about a third of the fresh water that comes from the mountains is dumped directly into the Atlantic Ocean, or Pacific Ocean, I'm sorry, the Pacific Ocean to take care of the snail darter. And so
it's illegal to dam and bring water.
Yeah, you can't dam water up or anything like that because it's all supposed to go out there, take care of a non-existent animal called a snail darter. But that's what happens to their water. So in California, they cause their own problem out there. But that's where we get a bunch of our produce. Now, you know, a lot of times, if you go to the grocery store and you ask where the produce is, what will they tell you today? The trucks haven't outrun. Trucks are not running, okay? Well, the trucks are not running for a couple of reasons. Number one, a lot of truckers have gotten out of the trucking business because the fuel is so blasted high. Okay? Now, who created that mess? Okay? And then there's also the fact that, I had on the tip of my tongue here a second ago, there's not a lot of food out there to transport. But, it's just basically that there's the fuel is so high the truckers are not willing to bring it out. Right now, in my business, my vendors tell me that there's all the plywood in the world is in Houston right now, in the Houston Ship Channel. Or not channel, but, you know, the ports there in Houston. There's tons and tons of plywood down there. The problem is they can't find trucks to bring it up here. The trucking industry has just gone crazy. And, of course, there's truck drivers. Lost a lot of truck drivers, apparently, to COVID as well. Trucking was something that wasn't really high-paying years ago. And so a lot of people probably quit because of the low-paying as well. But nevertheless, famine is something that God says is going to come. Continuing on verse 2, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet, and today judges barely or rarely make judgments based on law, they now make it based on whims or politics. In fact, I got a friend who is in Angie's class who is a judge here in this state. And I always joke with him, and I said, when are you going to run for Supreme Court, Texas Supreme Court? And he says, never. And he had a little joke about it. But I think a lot of it is that, you know, being judged very seldom has anything to do with law anymore. And that's what we have here, the judge and the prophet. And the diviner and the elder, the captain of 50 and the honorable men, the counselor and the skillful artisan, and the expert enchanter, I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. The people will be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. Are we seeing that today? How are we seeing that? Any ideas? How many of you ever heard the term contact tracing? Well, it's interesting. I don't have my phone here. But I was talking to a guy from Oregon at Angie's reunion. And he says, he's just made the statement that he says, well, I leave my phone at home most of the time. And I said, why? He says, because they're tracing us. And I said, well, they may be doing it in Oregon, but they're not doing it here in Texas. And he says, I bet you they are. I said, why do you say that? And he says, the way they trace us in Oregon was by an app called the Health app on an iPhone. How many of you got an iPhone? Look on your iPhone and see if it has a Health app.
It does, and you can't take it off.
It does, and you can't take it off.
It's Health or Health?
Health, H-E-A-L-T-H. That is the app they're using to follow everyone around right now. I would dare say Android has the same thing. So this Health app is what they use. Now, one of the things about the Health app is that you have to give it access to Wi-Fi and to use your cell phone towers. And I haven't given my Health app, which I told him wasn't on my phone. And he says, look at it and see. And I looked at it. Oh, it is. But this is where they're tracking you. And of course they're out there now trying to get your neighbor to report on you if you say what they call hate speech, whatever hate speech may be. Hate speech could be simply that I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is an idiot. But that could be considered hate speech in some circles. And so this is what they're doing. Everyone and everyone by his neighbor is oppressing. How about reporting that you're not vaccinated? Possibility, right? Okay. That's what they're doing there in Oregon right now. They're not necessarily vaccination, but they are tracing you. So if somebody that you were near or in the same vicinity that was later discovered to have COVID, now they're going to go to that person and want that person to quarantine and all these other people to quarantine. And so this guy says, well, I just leave my phone at home. I just don't even carry it with me anymore. Going on, it says, the child will be insolent which means to act proudly and arrogantly. I think we see that a little bit toward the elderly. We see that all the time, in fact. When I was a kid, if I was a kid that girl's age right there, and I went to that guy and says, "Hello, Andre," my dad would grab me by the arm, and I would be in a heap of trouble. Because you didn't talk to elders that way back then. The child would be insolent toward the elder, which is typically disrespect toward those who are more mature and wise, and the base toward the honorable. And it goes on, it says, when a man takes hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, "You have clothing, you be our ruler." Basically, that was talking about, we will let anybody be our ruler. Have we just now, less than 6-8 months ago, let just anybody become our ruler? Yes, we have. We've let somebody who is totally, even before any of this stuff happened, was it totally incompetent, totally unable to take and lead, and had a good track record of being that way. But yet he is now our leader. And let these ruins be under your power. In other words, you be our leader, and we're just going to blame you for all these problems. And what are they doing? Has not the media turned on the current president of the United States, acting president? I'll call him the acting president. You go to the media and see all these media organizations that were touting how good he's going to be. Now they have all turned in on him. I have a theory as to why that is, but we'll get to it here in just a minute. And let these ruins be on your power. Verse 7, in that day he will protest, saying, "I cannot cure your ills. I cannot get these people out." It could be a better word there. "For in my house is neither food nor clothing. Do not make me a ruler of the people. For Jerusalem stumbled and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against Yahweh, to provoke the eyes of Yahweh. The look of their countenance witness against them, and they declare their sin in Sodom. They do not hide." They do not hide. They do not hide it. Okay, so people's faces are telling what they're like, what they're doing. I liken this to the coming out of the closet. What was the big coming out of the closet a few years back? A woman named Ellen DeGeneres. Ellen DeGeneres sort of sounds degenerate. In fact, I thought that she had adopted that name. Come to find out, she's actually named that. I didn't know that. But it was a very degenerate thing that she's doing, right?
It's a similitude, too.
Yep.
Her name is a similitude for what she's doing.
Right. And so people are now openly doing it. And we got a today in our government, we got a cabinet that looks like America. At least that's what they say. It's got transgenders. It's got homosexuals. All types of races. And I'm not against the all types of races, as long as they qualify for all that. But the bottom line, though, it doesn't look anything like America. Because in America, only 1% of us are homosexual or transgender or any of those things. Why is it we have 2-3 on the cabinet? Doesn't look like America. But they say it does. Maybe that's because that's their view of America. Okay? "Woe to their soul, for they have brought evil upon themselves. Say to the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with them, for the reward of his hands shall be given him." So, say to the righteous that it shall be well with them. That's a comforting statement. Especially when it's followed by, woe to the... Say to the righteous that it will be well with them, for they shall eat of the fruit of their doings. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with them. So God says he's making a distinction, isn't he? A a distinction. At the same time, he's making a distinction between those who are righteous and those who are not. And I would submit to you, and we'll talk about this maybe, hopefully, maybe before the feast, I don't know. There is a way of escape in this. At least I believe so. For the reward of his hands shall be given. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, those who lead you cause you to err, to destroy the way of your paths. I got here written, see the Tanakh? This is the way the Tanakh says it. My people's rulers are babes. It is governed by women, O my people. I want you guys to think about something. The media is all over President Biden right now. The Republicans in Congress are calling for his impeachment. The Republicans have a much better case against Biden than they did against Trump. A much better case. It's a case of being basically incompetent. If they move forward on that, and if they actually are able to get impeachment, who becomes president?
Who becomes vice president?
Well, Nancy Pelosi won't automatically become. They'll do like it was in Gerald Ford's day, and they will take him and appoint a vice president.
So who do you think that would be?
Hillary. Yeah. So we'll have two women running the show.
Both dig this.
Actually, it's not the fact that they're running. It's the fact that they're standing. And that's the problem.
Yeah, there was a... Margaret Thatcher was a different woman.
Yes, exactly.
But this is in the end times. Margaret Thatcher died some years back.
She did. She was
pretty good. Okay. It is governed by women, O my people, your leaders are misleaders. They have confused the course of your paths. So, this is what's coming down. This is yet in the future because we can't look out there right now and see a woman in charge. But because it says this, what's going to happen? There will be a woman in charge of this country. And there'll probably be a number of them in charge of this country. Because that's the way our country is going. Remember, men today are what? We're racist pigs, aren't we?
Pretty much
racist pigs. So the tendency is to get rid of all paternal... No, what do they call it? Not paternal. Patriarchal way of thinking. Destroy patriarchy in this country. That's what they're hoping to do. All right, I want to go just another couple of passages here. Zechariah. This is on a little bit different thing here. And that is, I want to bring Jason, our late brother Jason, into this a little bit because, like I said, it sort of has brought things home to me. This week has been a very trying week for us in regards to trying to put everything together, all that is happening together. And I know that that our prayers were out there every day, praying for Jason that he would recover. Looked like he was recovering. In fact, I know many of us fasted for Jason, that he would recover. But unfortunately, he didn't. And in fact, even though it looked like he was going to pull through this, all of a sudden it snatched out, just like that. But there's something behind this that we need to understand, because we don't want to get discouraged by God. We don't want to just get discouraged by the things that we perceive God not paying attention to us and not listening to our prayers. Because I believe God hears every one of our prayers. And I think he acts on those prayers accordingly. And so the demise of Jason Shepherd, though it hurts us all, we cannot take and look at that as a failure on our part or as a failure on God's part, because we just frankly don't know what God has in store. But instead, I want us to take and focus in on the things that we know God has done. And I've talked about that quite a bit lately. We've got to focus on the things that we see God doing in our lives. Because the things that God does in our lives are those little bitty faith builders. And a whole bunch of little faith builders probably is much more valuable to us than a miraculous healing. And miraculous healings still happen, but they're generally just not exposed out there. I know of a number of people who have been healed of disease, likely death, because of the prayers of the families and those who are close to them, and various other things. These things still do happen, but because we don't see it happening, and my prayer for Jason was that God would reveal himself through Jason to doctors and all that stuff. But I don't think that's the way God's doing it right now. I really don't. And I want to quote this thing in Zerubbabel, because we're going to be faced with a lot of stuff up ahead. And I think it's really important for us to, as we go through these days we just talked about, and as we see more of these things that are prophesied come to pass, we need to have faith in God. But we've got to learn how to build faith in God without relying on big, miraculous things happening. And so here we are in Zechariah, and Zechariah was given a prophecy. Zechariah lived in the time of the rebuilding of the temple right after the Babylonian captivity. Zechariah's prophecies, his mission was to get the people to do the job, to build the temple. In spite of all of the problems they were facing, stay focused on building the temple. So God says this in chapter 4 to Zechariah. He says, "Then the angel who talked with me answered and said to me, 'Do you not know what these things are?'" And he had this image of the lampstand and the two olive trees on each side. And Zechariah answers and says, "No, my Lord." Then he said to me, "This is the word of Yahweh to Zerubbabel. Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says Yahweh of hosts." We've quoted that oftentimes, right? What does it mean? We have differing views, okay? But that's not the crux of it. The crux of it is coming up here. "Who are you, O great mountain?" Speaking of Zerubbabel. "Before Zerubbabel shall become a plain." Before you, the mountains shall become a plain. In other words, God saying to Zerubbabel, or saying to Zechariah, "I could make Zerubbabel flatten out mountains. He could take and get the biggest caterpillar dozer in the world, and in no time just flatten out a whole mountain, if I want it to be that way." But he says this, "Before Zerubbabel you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forward the top stone amid shouts of grace to it." In other words, the flattening of this supposed mountain. Then verse 8, "Then the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, 'The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. His hands shall also complete it.'" And this is the very interesting statement after that. He says, "Then you, Zechariah, then you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me to you." What was the only sign that was given to Zechariah to prove that he was actually being spoken to by the God of Israel? That the temple would be built by Zerubbabel. He had to wait for that temple to be built by Zerubbabel before he could actually prove in his mind that this was the God of Israel that was speaking to him. That's the only sign that God gave to Zechariah. And then it says, For whoever has despised the day of small things shall rejoice. Okay? The word there is for despise is the word booze, like boozing it up. Strong's 936, and it means hold as insignificant. What God is telling Zechariah is that if we hold, that there are a lot of people out there that hold as insignificant the little small things that God gives to us. The little small things that God does in our lives to show that He exists, to show that He is working with us. Because what are we all looking for? We're looking for big things. We want healings. We want clouds during the night, or another day, and fire by night. But God says He gives us what? Bunch of little things. Those little things are what we need to cling to. Because tough times are coming ahead. We need to do everything we can do to try to see God in our lives, see the little miracles that happen, even if it's every day getting up and seeing dew on the ground. Because dew on the ground is a miracle.
Every day.
And so we've got to recognize those things. The children of Israel had a miracle happen to them every single day while they were in the wilderness. What was it? Manna came down from heaven. But that wasn't enough for them. We can't be like them. We've got to see the little things. Build faith in those things. Because, unfortunately, I got one more scripture, and I'm going to bring out. Because when things, as we see these things approaching, it's going to happen fast. Hosea verse 5 says, "Hear this, O priest, take heed, O house of Israel." Where is the house of Israel located today? Right here. Right here. "I know Ephraim." Ephraim is Israel. "And Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you commit harlotry. Israel is defiled." Does that sound like us? Yes. "They do not direct their deeds toward turning to their God." They did that 20 years ago for a short period of time. Didn't do it this time. "The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also stumbles with them." This goes to show that this is not speaking of just the Jews. Because Judah is doing it along with Israel. Verse 6, "With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek Yahweh, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them." God has gone back to His place. He's not with us as He used to be. "They have dealt treacherously with Yahweh, for they have forgotten, for they have become pagan children." I mean, it's pretty clear. "Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage." What that's saying is it'll all happen in a month. When it comes, it will happen, and it will happen in a month. So, keep our eyes peeled, what's getting ready to happen. Look through these prophecies. I have become a student of prophecy, and I wasn't before. But as you can begin to see these things with 20/20 vision, we need to know what's going to happen next. And so we look in the prophecies and we see so that we can identify these things as they go. God laid them all out in Leviticus chapter 26, as well as He did in the prophets of old, the prophecies of Isaiah, Ezekiel, some in Jeremiah. And so once we see these things, we can take and know what's happening.